don't have the information, a simple answer like, I don't know, but let's look it up, will reinforce our child's feeling that we are being completely honest. Let's briefly review the miracle of human sexuality. When God created man and woman, he created them in his own image. Part of his design for human beings is the gift of sexuality, those distinctive features that make us either male or female, those qualities that influence the way we regard ourselves and others as male or female human beings. God's plan for reproduction is miraculous. We must stand in awe and wonder as we review it. Every person is a unique creation of God. Every person begins life with the joining of a sperm cell from the father and an egg cell from the mother. The bodies of the male and the female have been beautifully designed so that the cells can be joined. The male sex organs are designed to produce and store the sperm cells and to place them inside the female body on their way to finding an egg cell. The female body is designed to supply the egg cells, to provide nourishment and protection for an unborn child, and to help the child to be born. Egg cells are produced in the ovary, the two organs located on either side of the body, in the lower part of the abdomen. An egg cell, or ovum, is released from one of the ovaries about every 28 days. The egg cell moves through the fallopian tube to the uterus, or womb. If it is fertilized by a sperm cell, the egg cell will grow to become a baby in the uterus. Egg cells which are not fertilized pass from the body in menstruation. The uterus is a stretchy, hollow organ about the size of a pear that can expand like a balloon to hold a growing baby. At the lower end of the uterus is the cervix. The cervix opens into the vagina, the passageway from the uterus to the outside of the body. The outside opening of the vagina is covered by folds of skin called the vulva. The principal sex organs of the male are the penis and the two testicles. The testicles, which produce hundreds of millions of sperm cells, are protected in a bag called the scrotum. Through the center of the penis runs the urethra, the tube through which sperm cells leave the body. The sperm moves through small tubes inside the body and mixed with a fluid produced by the prostate gland in which the sperm cells swim. This mixture of sperm cells and fluid is called semen. A new life begins when a sperm cell from the father joins with or fertilizes an egg cell from the mother. The fertilized egg begins growing and attaches itself to the wall of the uterus. The growing fetus is attached to the lining of the uterus by the umbilical cord. Through it, nourishment and oxygen are brought to the unborn child, and wastes are removed to the mother. At times, one may be tempted to think about the entire process of sexual intercourse, conception, and birth in strictly clinical terms. But who can deny the miracles that are evident in every step along the way? We do need to share with our children the facts of life, but we also need to talk about the love that brings a man and a woman together in marriage, and why the sexual relationship is reserved for marriage. Parents can be helped and supported by a sensitive program of sex education in a Christian school. But we can't simply turn over our responsibility to others. From early on, we're really teaching about sex when husband and wife show love and concern for each other, attitudes which become models for their relationship with the other sex. How much should we teach at each age level? No more and no less than the child is able to understand. Answer questions when they arise, accurately, frankly, and reverently. For example, a preschool child may ask, where did I come from? Or, where did the new baby come from? For this age, an answer like, the baby came from its mother, is usually adequate. If the child is not satisfied with the answer, another question will naturally follow, like, but how does a baby come from its mother? And the answer might be, the baby grows in a safe, warm place inside the mother's body. When it grows big enough to live outside in God's world, it comes out of the mother's body. We say it is born. The preschool years are not too early to use the correct term when referring to the body part. Children soon learn that their sex organs are normal parts of the body, and that there is nothing shameful about them. The preschool years are also the time to impress on our children that they are very special gifts from God, that they are part of a family, and that there is not another person in the world who is exactly like him or her. Resources such as the book, Each One Specially, are available for this age level to assist parents in the teaching process at home. It answers, from a Christian point of view, typical questions a preschooler wonders about. The early school year, roughly...
You notice the difference in art? We use different styles for each one.
...as they make the transition to a completely new set of surroundings.
My favorite is the first one.
The school environment often triggers a great deal of hearsay information about sexual matters. Unfortunately, this information is often accepted at face value, no matter how ridiculous it may appear to adults. By early school years, children should be ready for more specific information regarding the body parts and their functions, and the importance of caring for their bodies. This is also the age when boys and girls are generally ready to begin learning about the miracle of birth. We parents can explain the entire birth process with awe and wonder as one of God's great miracles. What a miracle it is that two tiny cells that can only be seen under a microscope can unite and grow to become a baby. Again, resources are available for this age level. Books such as I Wonder Why will assist parents in their sex instruction in the home. In the years 8 through 11, the child grows at its own pace. At times, children may be concerned that they are not growing as fast as their friends, or that some girls seem to be growing faster than boys of the same age. We parents need to understand these concerns. We can also remind him or her that God designed each of us to be different, but that he loves all of us the same. At this stage in development, most children are ready to learn how the male and female sexual organs work. Before a boy reaches puberty, he needs to know what to expect, that his penis and testicles will grow in size, that hair will appear in his pubic area, and that he may experience ejaculation of semen while asleep. A girl who knows what happens at puberty will look forward to such signs of maturity as the broadening of her hips, the filling out of her breasts, and hair growing in the pubic area. Some girls in this age group may begin to menstruate, a frightening experience if they are not prepared for it. But if they have been told about it beforehand, they will be glad at this sign of growing up. The years 8 to 11 are vital years for instilling in children a solid set of values, that their bodies, as gifts from God, are to be cared for properly. These values include proper food and rest, exercise, and the avoidance of drugs. These are the years when friends are often the prime source of information about a lot of things, including sex. Unfortunately, much of this information is misinformation. Yet children will still rely on their parents for the correct information, particularly if they have been able to discuss their concerns openly in the past. Books like How You Got to Be You can provide a sensitive starting point for the parents' discussion with an 8 to 11 year old. 11 to 14. Now the changes come very fast. Parents see it in the mood swings of their children, happy one minute and in tears the next. What to do? We need to give children this age more responsibility and privileges. At the same time, we need to remain firm against rebellion, even while we allow our child to make more decisions on his own. Most of all, we need to point to the forgiving and strengthening love of God in Christ. For guilt and worry go so easily with a youngster's growing sexual awareness. My breasts are too small or too large, a girl may worry. Is God punishing me for thinking about boys? Boys have fears and worries too, like, what will mother say when she sees these sheep? A boy may worry after his first wet dream. Or, what will the girl expect me to do and say on a date? Our willingness to answer questions about developing bodies, and even more, to sympathetically listen to our children's fears and worries, are ways we demonstrate God's own love and concern for His growing children. Most young teens know what sexual intercourse is. If they learn from their friends, you may need to correct some misinformation. In explaining what happens in intercourse, Christian parents have an opportunity to point out the beauty of God's plan for creating new life. God planned intercourse to be an expression of love between a husband and wife. It is His plan that only married people have sexual intercourse. A husband and wife need to agree on their expectations for their children's first experiences with dating, and then talk over the subject frankly with the young person when he or she first shows interest in dating. Then too, as preparation for single dating, it's good to encourage group dating, such as a party in the home, church, or a school. When a child is ready for single dating, we will want to discuss with him or her such questions as, how can I show my affection towards someone on a date without going too far? How do I get a boy to ask me out? What do I do on a date? Help for such a discussion, and a helpful resource for your child with many other questions typical of this age, is available in the book, The New You. The high school years, ages 14 and up, remember them? It's a time when it's normal for young persons to challenge their parents. As young people move toward adulthood, they ask themselves, who am I? They tend to critically evaluate everything and everyone they grew up with. It's a time of stress and conflict. Charming and outgoing one moment, and non-communicative and hostile the next. We can help our young people grow through this stage as we overlook minor irritating habits and listen to their ideas. Of course, we still need to confront undesirable attitudes and behavior, but we do so most helpfully when we acknowledge that our teenagers are becoming adults. Instead of simply laying down the law, we can explore problem areas together, seeking God-pleasing solutions which meet both our needs and their needs. This is the age when sex becomes more than a topic for discussion. It's real and it's personal. They will need help in thinking through issues like marriage, birth control, abortion, venereal disease, and homosexuality. What's a parent to do? Share what you believe. Also, point them to good books to read and discuss with you, like Lord of Life, Lord of Me. This book covers the whole gamut of teenage questions and concerns about sex, and does so in the framework of our Christian faith. In this presentation, we've surveyed some of the typical questions of each age level. Perhaps we need to remind ourselves again that even more important than answering our child's questions is the atmosphere in our home. The Christian faith is lived out as parents show love and concern for one another and for their children. This example is the very essence of sex instruction, for the attitudes we share are catching. They are remembered. They are as important as any factual information we may share along the way.
Okay, you see that it does overview then. We wanted to make a piece that was not simply a promo for the series, but was genuinely helpful. You do not see the heavy stress that we have in the book on the husband-wife relationship, but you do see some of it coming through anyway, right? Now, some people have said, why don't you deal more with single parents, for instance? You'll see some single-parent pictures. We said, we recognize what's happening in our culture, but the way God intended for children to be born is to be born into a home where there's a mommy and a daddy. And that's still the best way to raise children. And so, therefore, that was the emphasis. And we were concerned a little bit about adoption because we did not emphasize adoption. And some people faulted us for it in the beginning. But I tell you, I have letters in my files from adoptive parents saying how helpful the series was to their children also. So there are limitations to the series, but I think it does very well what it was intended to do. If you're going to introduce in your confirmation class, that kind of thing, I would not introduce it under the commandments. What I recommend is first article or Lord's Prayer. That's where we recommend it. Okay, any kinds of comments in the few minutes that we have left? Or concerns? Yes?
Do you deal with the sexual diseases at all?
Yes, we do. Of course, we couldn't deal with AIDS because it was not there. And the one that I even choke on because I can't pronounce it, chlamydian, whatever, chlamydian. I tell you, we had it in, and we took it out because it seemed like it wasn't a big issue. People were saying it's going to be number one, and of course, that's what happened to it. Another thing that was very, very, very in vogue at the time we were ready to go to print was toxic shock syndrome. And so we had to make a decision, and we left it out. Now, what happened? My youngest daughter was in the hospital the day she was due to graduate from high school with toxic shock syndrome. And I said, it's God punishing me for leaving it out of the sex education series. Anybody else? Yeah?
Just that kind of group use of those materials is, I mean, with all the stress on the parents, that's still an appropriate way to do it, within groups, like,
yes.
Working through the material.
Yeah. And you were the one, Jay, that asked the question about how we would do it?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have time, then I would break it down into individual interest groups. But somehow or other, let them see the one appropriate to their age group. I would really recommend, and not, I don't get any money from the series or anything, but I would recommend that you urge your parents to buy the adult book and then the age-appropriate books. We priced each one at $5.95 so that they would be affordable.
Is there any other hints or help that could be given to parents as the material is shown to them in terms of how to introduce it to their children or how to, you know, the material is there, but in terms of how to actually apply it? Okay.
The book.
The book part.
Right. If you can instill the confidence in them that they have all the answers that they need, and that if they don't have the answers, that you will find a particular, it might be an esoteric kind of question, but you will find the answer for them. No, because I don't have that kind of evidence. What we normally hear are complaints. I just got this last week. I got a complaint, for instance, about the bulletin insert that we prepared for 1986 Life Sunday. The pastor wrote me a really scathing letter about it. We don't normally hear the good things. Oh, no, I take that back. Now, in Houston, for instance, the DCE there, he shared his whole plan with me. It was very successful. People who have used it, like with VBS, etc., have shared those kinds of things. So I have heard some of the positives, but I haven't heard a lot of them. Let me tell you that it's my impression from talking, for instance, to principals, teachers in schools, that it probably is very, very underused. Yeah. I was going to say you will, but I don't mean you, Jay. It depends upon where you are and where you are with your board or parish education or whatever board. Make sure that you process all of this stuff through your boards. Make sure that you don't spring surprises on people. I don't believe that we should be seeking parental permission to talk about God's gift. And so, but you may have to get there, and they have to learn to trust you, okay? So I don't personally, you heard me say in the beginning, I don't believe in separating males and females. Dave from Village Lutheran Chapel School, he did separate out then for the other discussions, and that was because the teachers did not feel comfortable dealing with both sexes together. And that's fine. That's where they are. So I've got to respect that. Yeah.
Our sixth grader has been through this whole series and then also Dobson's preparing for adolescence and has a really healthy attitude about sex. He's in a public school and his teachers are humanitarians and are starting a sex education series in a couple weeks, which will be, you know, they said they're not going to talk about values, but
I don't personally believe that it is. I can remember, let me just back up. I think that, for instance, some of the problems that we have with the present abortion mess are the acceptance of evolution as a fact. And when you can dehumanize or evolutionize the fetus, then you can dispose of it. And I can remember when my oldest daughter was in sixth grade, they debated evolution versus creation in their Christian day school. And I only know of one child in that class that believed in evolution after that debate, and it was a child that believed in it before. Now, when that same daughter got into high school, she got into some very hard-nosed kinds of classes where they said there's only one approach, and they wouldn't listen to anything else. So when we went out to Fort Robinson in Nebraska, they have all these dinosaurs out there. She said they're not real. Dinosaurs never existed because her high school religion teacher told her that they were just a figment of the evolutionist imagination. Well, good grief, they're the bones. Okay, now when she runs into the reality, her faith is going to be tested. As a matter of fact, she has had her faith tested many times as it's come up against the reality of the world. I would say that if you work with that child, and that's a delicate matter, right? Because you're coming into a clash. You work with that child. I don't see that it would damage. I would hope so, yes. In fact, I don't like teaching sixth graders as much as I do fourth and fifth. Sixth graders are still a little pliable. Seventh graders, they get a little nasty, don't they? They change them, right? The third, fourth grade, you know, whatever said, the teacher says, mom and dad say, everything is gospel, huh? Everything is the truth. But mom, the teacher wouldn't say it if it weren't true. But by sixth grade, you can, and especially like, if you're watching television and that kind of stuff, you say, yeah, we don't believe that, right? We don't believe that. If you're constantly talking about the kinds of value systems that you see. Yeah?
I know maybe some parents will have realized in presenting to them that they may have made some mistakes when they have older children in high school. Will the materials be as effective for parents of those children who maybe have made some mistakes on where there are some problems, misconceptions?
Oh, well, the kids have misconceptions anyway. But as far as the mistakes that you have made, ask for forgiveness or apologize for them. And I'm really serious about that. Because you have made a lot of mistakes. In a presentation that my wife and I did for Indiana congregation a week ago, we had clergy and lay people there, and they said one of the things that we liked about you as supposed experts, and I didn't say supposed experts, they said experts, is that you admitted that you've made mistakes, because we all make them. And I think being right up front about your attitude, where you are. Our youngest daughter, as she approached menstruation, actually started menstruating, we could laugh about the process. And we could talk about where we had been when we were kids, too, with those kinds of things. And so it was not the traumatic kind of thing, because, you know, we're humans and she shares her dumbness, okay, or her ignorance, if you will, with us. Now, what happens, too, with children, since I said that, the sharing, is that you may find a child who enters a naturally modest period where it seems that everything that you have set up to that point is now shut down. Don't give up. We stay in here, answer all questions as they arise. That's not enough. You actually have to be forging forward with it, even when they are apparently not seeking the kinds of information, because they're getting it all of the time. Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of things coming out now. Well, my 5-year-old granddaughter, my daughter, my daughter was 30 yesterday, and her 9-year-old and 5-year-old and her daughter, who was a year old today, live with me now. And so I'm going through all of these stages again, and including having that boy in the house that I never had. And somebody tried to, in Crestwood Plaza, an older man tried to pick up her 5-year-old daughter a week ago, tried to lure her away. And I take her there, and I'm over to the record shop, and I got her in a toy store. I'm watching the entrance, but I got her over there, so obviously I can't do that anymore. And there are things, you know, like the Disney has produced, etc. I'm going to be coming out with some more stuff, at least some more recommendations. We did one on for teachers on abuse. Let me tell you, too, that dealing with abused people, you've got to treat them very gently. They don't forgive themselves. And if you figure, 25% of your women are abused, for instance, we've got some horrendous problems. I could tell you story after story of the pathology because of the abuse that comes out in another area. So I believe that we've got to take seriously the abuse. Also, another thing is the adult children of alcoholics. A tremendous problem in our society. We're just hearing things about that. And one point that I've lost, but anything else as we conclude? Yes. No. One of my daughters, you know, used to hear the questions about, is it all right to kiss on the first date, that kind of stuff. One of my daughters asked, is oral sex all right? You know, and she's 27 now, so this is 10, 15 years ago already that she's asking that question. Is it a real concern? Yes, it is. No. Yeah, I said, is it a real concern? Yes. But there's a whole generation that will not accept those kinds of practices. There's also a difference between blue collar and like college educated, etc. College educated are much more open to oral sex. Blue collar will not accept it. So it would be very difficult to deal with it. I don't like the advice like with Charlie Shedd, et cetera, talks about how far can you go. You heard of how far can you go question in here. That's not mine. I was the sex expert, but I didn't put that question in. Other people put that one in. Because I don't believe those questions should be dealt with in that kind of situation. I believe those questions should be dealt with one to one. Jay?
I'm just curious, what did you tell your daughter? How do you deal with that? I hear what you're saying, one to one, but...
What did I tell her? I said, yeah, well, I don't find... I didn't find anything, okay, I didn't find anything in Scripture which says thou shalt not oral sex, okay? Scripture doesn't spend a lot of time on sex. We read a lot of things into it, yeah.
Is there advice given in romance to the parents on how to deal with pornography and how that might come into contact with that? How they can be rather shocking and utterly
major consumers of pornography are probably the 13 to 18 year olds. No. And I fought a battle for a long time on you cannot separate the violence from the sexual pornography. Now the pornographers have done us a favor with the snuff films, those kinds of things. I was at Senate office building for the Mies briefing in November to the Religious Alliance Against Pornography. Thompson, et cetera, were there. And that campaign is essentially a meaningless campaign because it's really aimed at hardcore pornography. But our society is permeated with pornography, all the way down to PG. Pornography, a distortion. Okay, a distortion. And if you don't believe it, your pedophiles, etc., pedophiles will use magazine ads of children and duplicate those to produce their own child pornography. There are over 25,000 studies indicating the effects of media violence and pornography on us. And we continue to say that it is not a problem. But it's a terrible problem. And I am one who says, why should we have G for little people and then PG, PG-13, etc.? I think that Scripture is very clear that you don't put garbage in, whether you're a child or an adult. Garbage is never acceptable. And that's where I am with it. And I recognize that I'm fighting a losing battle in that one too. But the attacks against the hardcore pornography are essentially meaningless attacks. Donner, etc. There's Donnerstein. There's studies indicate that the effects of like the R are as bad as your hardcore pornography. I think it's something like 33% of our males in this society, given the opportunity, would rape. We're a terribly violent society. We are also sexually desensitized.
I know you're talking about 13 to 18 year olds saying crimes and things like that. I know at that age there's a whole underworld. And parents generally don't deal with it at all. And yet, 13 to 18 are very influential years.
Example for one thing, and the witness not moralizing, but the witness. I think you were asking the question if you've done a bad job up until then. Can you establish the proper kinds of relationships? It's very difficult, but I'll tell you, you don't moralize. You witness. You witness to what you believe. Christ did it, right? Use that kind of example and keep on speaking out against it. I serve on the task force, the synodical task force, that is dealing with the issue. If you look in the last convention workbook, you'll see a resolution that we had passed on pornography, and also a statement that we have written in. We're in the process now of developing a synodical, a handbook for congregational use on the very problem that you're talking about. We're also expanding our task force to take in congregational and district leaders. So we're not going to let it drop. But a year ago, we did a survey of three districts, of half the pastors in those three districts. And what I said is we have a tremendous mandate for inaction, because none of them saw pornography as a problem. And they were not aware of the groups that exist, etc. Now, if you read the resolution that we passed at the 1986 convention, you'll see that it actually talks about social action. It talks about taking action against people distributed, etc. So we do have some pretty strong language, and we just met this last week. And we will continue with that, and that stuff will become available to you. Yeah. Well, one of the pieces of advice given to you for a baby is when the baby starts playing with its genitals, give it a toy or something or else, because babies like to explore, and so you can distract them. It's not the same. It's not the same as playing with fingers and toes, because they get an extra special reward when they play with the genitals, because the males, the boys, are capable of orgasm, and the females lubricate. And as far as the distractions, those kinds of things, keep them from thinking that this is dirty. I deal with so many people that think masturbation is equivalent to homosexuality, for instance. And in this very room, I've had discussions with seminary students and their wives over the children masturbating. He thinks it's the worst sin in the whole world, and she thinks it's all right because in their family that they grew up masturbating. Well, the advice given today is if you want to do that, go to your room and do it. I have not, by the way, Dobson also has problems with that. He says, I just don't know what to say about it. It isn't mentioned in Scripture. The CTCR document on sexuality does talk about chronic masturbation. Let me say this, that I believe that the fantasies are sinful. Jimmy Carter got in trouble when he talked about lusting after flesh. Well, I think he's very scriptural. And also the danger with masturbation is in fact tuning in on yourself. But there are extra special rewards. I see more and more middle-aged guys now in midlife crisis turning to 20, 25-year-old males in homosexual relationships rather than having affairs. I believe that's because they get more of a kick, a sexual kick. And so there are extra special rewards, really, to masturbation, but it's... Yeah, as non-judgmentally as possible. It's the same thing with the changing of the diaper and all of those kinds of things. You may have a child, you can't keep clothes on her. You know, she always wants to run around naked. And you're going to despair of her ever going anyplace. She won't be able to go to school because she doesn't wear clothes and all those kinds of things. And if you handle it just as naturally as can be, and, you know, you can, a no, etc. I remember lying on my, I made the allusion to not having had boys. I remember lying on my daughter's couch. I'd been sleeping yesterday or something, and I woke up and here's my little grandson standing there saying, Grandfather, don't I have a fine-looking peavis? No, I was not into peavises, okay? I said, yes, Matthew, I think you have a fine-looking peavis. But I think you better go get dressed now, too. And I don't think I traumatized him for life. He maybe traumatized me. But, little kid, you know, boys leave toilet seats up and all that kind of stuff. And girls don't. Well, anyway, but that was a learning for me, too, about where I was with those kinds of concerns, okay? So the idea of not saying sex is dirty, etc. But I am not where, like in developmentally disabled, for instance, they allow people, they create devices, etc., to allow them to masturbate as reward. I'm not there either, okay? But I cannot find anything in Scripture which says that masturbation is sinful. The turning in on self, the fantasy, etc., I believe that's sinful. Yes? Oh, yes.
Helping maybe provide a parenting support group of some sort. And since it's a hot issue, it might be one where you can get a foothold onto other issues that can help from that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that happen anywhere, but...
Yeah, I see it more going like from marriage enrichment or one of the other programs into this fields program. But that's because mostly what I do with the sex education is just this kind of presentation, introducing it. So I don't do the long-term stuff. But yes, very definitely. See, I believe that you should have a model, an intentional plan, and maybe some of you have heard me speak about it, that your marriage and family track starts with pre-marriage. Pre-marriage, after marriage, you get them together again, and then that's when you start talking about parent education before the children are born. If they work it that way. I mean, if the parents have waited, you know, until after marriage. And then after parent education and the children are born, then you can parenting skills, etc., those kinds of things, and parent support groups, developmental. If there's one thing that I could do for parents would be to teach them something about developmental levels of their children. What the children are capable of understanding at the various stages. But yes, definitely. Okay, well, we're way over time. Thank you for being with me. And
I just wanted to make mention, John Griffiths is the Secretary of Family Life Education at the Synodical Headquarters, and he's a very hard case to get a hold of. But if you do need to have questions answered about issues regarding family life education, I know that you can at least call his office and leave word with the secretary or write him and some way get answers to the questions that you need to have answers for. But there are lots of materials. The Concordia Sex Education Series, by the way, I wrote Dobson just out of curiosity to see what he would recommend, and he sent me a flyer with the Concordia Sex Education Material.
How long ago did you do that? Okay, because I was just with, as I said, I was with Dobson in November, and I sent all of our stuff to Pep Jackson, his first vice president. And so I'm glad to see that, because I had invited Dobson to the family festival, our family gathering, the first one ever we're having this July. And what we're having is Steve and Annie Chapman, who do the music for him instead, because Jim said he won't be there.
But he's recommending that you can pass those materials out and write in the questions.
I appreciate hearing that because I hadn't heard. Thanks, Harry.